coming up some great insight and solid practical topics to help couples play to each other's strengths and stick together when the going gets tough. That's next on Focus on the Family.
How you find the magic in the mundane is you look for it in unexpected places, not where you think you're going to find it. I think I'm going to find the magic when he just verbally tells me how wonderful I am and how wonderful dinner was and how great the house looks and how amazing.
Did I tell you how nice your hair looked today?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think that's where he's going to give it to me, is in all the verbal stuff. That's not how he rolls. I need to just say, Lord, I know he loves me. Help me to see it.
That's Karen Eamon, and she joins us today on Focus on the Family, along with her husband, Todd. And your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Todd and Karen Eamon have a little over 30 years of marriage experience and wisdom to share with us today. And I know you're going to be inspired by them, and I was reading their book, Keep Showing Up. I love the title.
And Todd is a first-time guest here. Karen has been here a number of times.
Yay, Karen.
Talking about a broad range of subjects. She's a speaker for Proverbs 31 Ministries and a New York Times best-selling author, and they hail from Michigan and have three adult children.
Todd and Karen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me back, and let me do a little show and tell and bring my husband with me.
Yeah, we wondered if there was a husband.
Finally brought Todd along. That's good. We have some questions for you, Todd.
Oh, please. I'll really let you know what it's like.
Right. Let's set the stage for the listener. How did you two meet?
Whose story do you want?
No, great. We want the truth.
Yeah, we met in college. It was my sophomore year, and he had transferred in from a community college, and we met, I know the exact day. Do you remember the year?
Are you bragging?
I always love to hear Carolyn tell the stories and tell the dates, because she does it with so much color than I do, so I like to hear her tell the story and tell the dates.
You can tell the black and white version. No, we met in the fall of 1983, and we're friends for about a year. Got engaged, and 8 months later got married.
You know, something that's so good that couples should do is premarital counseling. And you did that, and you were told something that kind of rocked your relationship. What was it?
Well, back then, there weren't quite as many personality tests and all these evaluations that there are today,
right.
But there were some. And I remember taking a battery of tests. My husband and I went to premarital counseling with the pastor on staff at my home church. He went
Which
in
I
one
applaud
room.
You for. Good
yes,
job.
Yes, we knew we wanted to do that. We knew we needed to do that. They took him in one room. I went in another room. We took this battery of tests, came back together, and I was just ready for the pastor to say, this marriage was just made in heaven. You guys are going places. You're going to do great things for God. And instead, he kind of looked at Todd's profile and my profile and said, I just have to be honest with you. I know you love each other and you love the Lord, but people with your two unique personalities married to each other probably have about a 5% chance of staying married.
That's amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about letting the air out of the relationship.
Welcome to marriage.
Yeah. So, okay, how did you react? What was your immediate response? Let me start with Todd.
Well, I didn't really know what to expect because I didn't know what marriage was all about. But I guess really the statistics and all that kind of stuff really didn't affect me that much. Because
so you're ready to throw it out the window.
Yeah.
They don't know me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
That's
so
fair.
I mean, I was pretty neutral, to be honest.
Yeah, okay.
And I think I kind of had two reactions. Part of me was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Maybe I've picked the wrong person. And the other part of me, because of how my personality is, was like, oh, yeah? I'll show you. Because you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to show you that I can't.
But, you know, in that, there are 20, 30-somethings listening, either through the podcast or radio, too. That can be a fear gripper for somebody who's single, thinking they've got to find the exact right person that God has matched me with in eternity. And I think that's true when you pick the person. God knows already what's happening there, right? So how do you, as a single or a courting single, how do you put that at ease that even though you only have a 5% chance, I mean, you've done it.
Right, right.
So how do you wrestle with that going back to that single moment? Why didn't you bail on Todd?
Well, I think luckily I had some mentors in my life that kind of went against the grain of culture and this whole soulmate concept.
Right.
I think that's ruined a lot of marriages from the get-go because, first of all, single people aren't two half people looking for their other half that's out floating in the universe, that one person that's going to finally complete them.
That is so good. Say it.
You know, single people are whole people.
Right.
Right?
That meet whole people.
Yes, that meet whole people. And there's not just this one person that, you know, is the only fit and the best fit for you. And if you pick the wrong one, now you're doomed. That's just a real wrong and selfish view of marriage, because marriage isn't about making you happy and complete. Marriage is about two whole people coming together to glorify God.
Now, the only caveat to that, I would agree wholeheartedly, but when you have a person who's in a, you know, terrible situation, that emotionally or whatever, psychologically, they're damaging. I mean, that's a big issue.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and that would be the one caveat. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and whenever I talk about marriage, I write about marriage, I always am careful to say, you know, I'm talking to the average marriage,
and
I'm not talking to those situations that, you know, totally, they have biblical grounds, there's abuse of all kinds going on. That's those people we are not talking
about.
Well,
let me dig into the first few years of marriage. What did it look like, and how many triggers were being pushed, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we had a lot of triggers going on. I would say,
I wish people could have just seen
the viewers can just roll back and watch that one again.
Well, I've read the statement before, the first 50 years of marriage is the hardest.
The first 50, second 50 are great.
Right. I say the first 10 were the hardest. Now, Kieran might say the first five, but I think for us, it's coming into this relationship that's so romanticized, either Hollywood or whatever it may be. We have this expectation of what it should be. We get in the midst of it, and it's just not quite what it looked like. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing this person, these fears, these reactions I never saw before, as she saw as in me as well. So it's like, wow, I don't know if I signed up for this program. So all of a sudden, we're starting to reveal these things in our marriage that were from the past that we're never exposed in our dating. And it's like, oh, I don't know if I'm liking that so much. But I would say that was really the hardest part in those first 10 years, and even to today, is understanding what she brought into the marriage, and she understanding what I brought into the marriage, and how that affects how we interact.
Karen?
Well, I think because we both make decisions very differently, and we both handle conflict very differently, and come on, marriage is full of decisions and conflict, it was always coming up, and I was always thinking, he's not doing it right, because he's not doing it like I would. You know, for example, making decisions. Todd's a little more thorough. I'm not going to say slow, but that's what I mean.
Right. He's so polite.
I know. When he makes decisions, so I always joke that he's the kind that says, ready, aim. Hang on a second, I gotta make sure I'm aiming. I think I'm ready. Aim. And I'm like, just fire already, you know? That's how he rolls. But I kind of go, ready, fire. Wait, was I supposed to aim? You know?
Right. And so good description.
Yeah, and so I would be like, come on, let's make these decisions. Let's make them quickly. I think quick, I talk quick. Let's make the decision quick. And he wanted to kind of process things a little bit more. And when it came to conflict, we needed to talk about something. I wanted to talk about it now. He wanted to talk about it, I don't know, maybe never, but at least 3 days from now.
Right.
But I would have wanted to talk about it yesterday if I known it was going to happen today. I mean, I'm just that kind of person. And so we have these decisions to make, this conflict that's coming up. And I started to see his ways as wrong, and he saw my ways as wrong, instead of just seeing them as different.
Well, it's interesting. Some people, they're so comfortable in conflict, they will create conflict to feel comfortable.
Yes. That's exactly like what you. I was doing until a mentor pointed out to me what I was doing.
Stop it.
And she said, you're creating conflict where none exists just because it feels familiar. Stop it.
This is the question I always put to Gary Chapman or Gary Thomas. Why did God construct marriage this way? And I think in the opening we hit it, but it's that idea, and it's so simple. I want you to be more like me. So you're going to have some issues in marriage that make you hopefully look inward, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's so important for people to hear, that you can work on you, and all you can do is influence your spouse. I mean, that's it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's best to work on you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think what happens in this very strange way is the thing that we want the most and we maybe even pray about the most happens, and we don't even recognize it. And by that, I mean this. What Christian doesn't want to be more like Jesus? Doesn't want to be more loving, more grace-filled, more patient, more forgiving? We want to be like Jesus. Oh, make me more like Jesus. And then this person appears in our life who gets on our very last nerve and tries our patience and makes us have to exert patience or makes us have to forgive and give grace. And they're standing right in front of us as a tool God uses to make us more like him.
But Karen, man, you're on it, because what we say we want and what we truly want are often different.
Exactly.
And I think in our Christian bubble, we've really honed the ability to say the right things but not necessarily believe them. And that's what you're saying.
Yes, we want to have our Instagram-worthy quiet time in the morning. I'm not saying I haven't taken pictures of my Bible and my coffee in the morning. I have.
No!
But we want to read the word, shut the book, and just go be it. We just want to be like Jesus. We don't realize we have to become like him. It's a process.
Well, I'd say the toughest place to be it is in marriage, mm-hmm. because that person knows you more intimately than anybody, mm-hmm. and they know when you're faking it, mm-hmm. if I could be that blunt. Karen, in fact, you even came up with a nickname for Todd. He's your sandpaper.
Yes, my sandpaper
that's a,
spouse.
That's wonderful. How does that make you feel, Todd?
About Mr. a 60 sandpaper. Grid.
That's pretty good. See, look at that grit. Correct you. I love it.
You corrected him first. If I rewind the tape, I think you corrected him first.
We're two controlling people. What are we doing? But sandpaper. Yeah. That is in fact exactly what the Lord I think intends.
Yeah. And now I understand now big picture, you know, as we grow together, and it's the old, it's just a new way of saying iron sharpening iron, as scripture Correct. Says. So, you know, the older you get, the more you understand that's kind of what it is. I mean, you're two different people. You're very rough in how you deal with each other sometimes. But the intent is always should be for the other person. And as you are grinding against one another and you're thinking to serve the other one and how can I encourage the other one, it becomes smoother. But the reality is, you know, the grit is always going to be there until death, because we live in these things called fleshly, earthly bodies. They're still sinful, yet saved by grace and all that. But it's going to be, it's a struggle to the end. It just truly is.
Okay, if we get right down to it, it really comes down to little things that can drive you crazy. And I guess the main question is why? Why do these little things, in the big scheme of eternity, why do we let these little things get a hold of us?
Well, I think if you really dig down deep, you will find that those things that drive you nuts about your spouse actually have a flip side, and they're probably something that first attracted you to them.
Give us
the first
two
place.
Or three examples.
Oh, I could give you...
Just two or three.
I can do a whole hour with no
hold
topic.
Hold back.
Well, I think of with Todd and I, one thing that I loved about him was how laid back he was. When we were first in college and we were becoming friends.
Now
and
he
we
takes
were
too long to make a decision.
Exactly. It comes out later as he's not just laid back and go with the flow. You know, when we would say we were going to go for dinner or a movie that night, he would always say, I have no opinion. You pick. I loved that setup. I loved it until we got into marriage. And then I saw his hesitancy maybe to make decisions as it came across as, in my eyes, him being passive. So it made me, aggressive. So I guess you could say we have a passive aggressive marriage. But anyhow, for me, he loved how I could talk. I could work a room, talk to the college president, make everybody feel included. But then he said, you know, about 3 days into our honeymoon, I thought, when is she ever going to stop talking? You know, in fact, have I ever told you that he's already decided what he's going to put on my tombstone if I pass away before he does? Yes. It's not going to cost him very much.
What is it?
A period. She's finally done trying.
Not even an exclamation point.
It is finished. It is finished.
But I think, you know, I
It's very
maybe
nice
think,
of you to laugh at that, by the way.
Yeah. I got an upgraded ring on. No, I'm just scratching. No, but I think, you know, those things that maybe bother us now, they have a good side. It's just that our strengths sometimes morph into, well, we don't really call them weaknesses. We were taught once to call them non-strengths. And even just the way we do things around the house, yeah, it bugs us maybe because we think that our way is right and their way is wrong. And the controlling person thinks more like, I wish they'd get with the program. But then I think, and I'm sure Todd would agree with this, the person who feels like they're being controlled, they want out. Like, they don't want you to tell them how to hang the towel. They know how to hang a towel. They're an adult.
But they struggle telling you that.
Correct.
That's part of the problem.
You're right.
Would you agree, Todd?
Yeah, to me, it seems because I'm passive and I tend to be a peacemaker, I tell myself it's not an issue. But right. It becomes an issue to me later on.
It kind of
reveals itself in like a weird argument. It's like Karen would say to me, why'd you get mad at me about that? And it's like, well, it's really probably not that about that. It's probably 2 months back on something else I just stuffed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Because normally that passive personality is stuffing or
typically.
Withholding.
Yeah.
And some Christians, let me ask you this, Todd, because it's really important in the marital relationship that you got to deal with that. Because some of us, I think, in the Christian community think that absorbing it is a fruit of the Spirit. This is Christ-like. It's restraint. It's kindness. Mm-hmm. It's always goodness, even though it's festering there. Mm-hmm. So it's really not a fruit of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's causing that kind of explosion at some point, mm-hmm. 2 months down the line, 3 months down the line. So why do we get that crossed? Why do we try to fake the fruit of the Spirit when underneath it's really agitating us.
Right. And that's the facade that we've learned in Christianity, and I believe in America, is that we pretend to be somebody that we're not. Because when we say we struggle with these issues or it's a sin issue that we have, we see it as a weakness. God sees it as a weakness, but the ability to empower a strength into you through His Holy Spirit, to make something weak strong. But there's something that we've told ourselves, this is weak if I share, if I have an issue with this, or if I have a thought about another woman about this or whatever. But it's not, because in the midst of that, Christ will come in. He takes what is weak and becomes strong.
Right. This is a personal question, but how have you dealt with that on a scale of 1 to 10 as a passive person? Do you feel like you're at a 7 or an 8 now, that you've matured in that area? Or, you know, this is hard for a person who's learned from childhood how to behave.
Yeah.
So how are you doing?
For me, I've picked certain people, I think. If there's a certain area in my life that I need to talk to someone about, then there's that person I hit. Because I'm not a real relational person, there's people that have lots of relationships, but very shallow.
Uh-huh.
I have very few relationships with people, and I would say they're very deep. They're people that I maybe wouldn't even talk to for a month or two. And I can connect them with right away if there's an issue.
Yeah.
So I think it's finding the right support. I would say as a passive person, that still tends to be my weakness, is to say, I can control this, I can manage this and take care of it. So until the day I die, I think that's going to be one of my issues.
Well, that's good. I mean, you're aware of it, you're moving along. And I would think the other thing is, Karen's complimenting you in that way, because she's pushing some of those buttons, and it's good to know that they're there, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's a positive way to look at something that could be taken negatively.
Right, yeah. And it's always how a spouse comes across when they kind of push that button.
Right.
I think in our marriage now, I think Karen does a good job at that. It's not like a prying, a pushing, or, I want to see your phone, or I whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, too, not only just in observing our own marriage, but other marriages that we've been close to, what happens with this whole not speaking up when, you should, and thinking it's the Christ-like thing to take a bullet. I think what happens with couples is, well, I have this theory that there are a lot of Bible verses that we gravitate toward one or the other of the half of the verse. So think of speak the truth in love. So some people just bark out the truth in an unloving manner. Hello, that would be me. And other people think the only loving thing to do is not to speak at all. But we need both personalities, need to learn to do both things.
Correct. Those are the extremes on both
ends. Yes. And rather than just hold back and not say the truth because you don't think it's very loving, no, speak it, but speak it in a loving way. That person usually doesn't have a hard time speaking the loving thing. They have the hard time just saying it. But then for someone like me, who tends to bark out the truth in an unloving manner, I need to just stick to the facts, say it in a loving way, don't hitch things to it like, and you always, and you never, but just...
Man, that's so good.
With this situation, this is what happened, this is how I feel.
I'm just thinking of truth and grace. I mean, we hide behind both.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Lord is always balancing that. Here's the truth and here's the grace.
Right. And we, depending on our personality makeup, we go to one extreme or the other.
Boy, it's so hard in marriage to do that. Tell us about the trio of trouble that can affect marriage. I think this is very practical for the listeners.
Yeah, a lot of times when you ask people what are the biggest areas of conflict, they'll say finances or sex or in-laws or raising the kids.
Yes.
And those are areas of conflict. But what I see even more is when you dig down deeper, there are three things that seem to bubble up in all of those different areas.
So those are symptoms and these are root causes.
Yes. And it's not original to me. I actually remember listening to a guest speaker Todd had in when he was a youth pastor that was talking about getting along with your parents to teenagers. But I remember depositing these and thinking, wow, this could really relate to marriage. And it has. I've seen it over 30 years. So those are unmet expectations, emotional baggage, and also perceptions, wrong perceptions. So unmet expectations, I grew up with a dad that could fix everything and a brother that could fix everything. And I married a man who, when the first faucet in our first little apartment started dripping, he said, what do I do? Who do I call?
I'm with you, Todd.
Well, I expected, that he would know that. So we have these unmet expectations, or we have emotional baggage, things that were said to us or about us that we have carried with us. And it's like we're standing in front of our spouse with a suitcase. We each have a suitcase full of stuff from our past. I don't know what is in his suitcase. He doesn't know what's in mine until in conflict it comes tumbling out. Like I remember one time when I thought Todd wasn't coming clean, like that he ate the last brownie in the pan, I said, oh, come on, stop playing dumb with me. Well, that was an expression in our house that meant you were bluffing.
Right.
Well, he was raised with a learning disability. He has dyslexia, and he's never felt like he was the smartest kid in the class. And that triggered something when I said, quit playing dumb with me. Later, he said, why did you call me stupid? And I wasn't saying that. I was saying you were bluffing. But his baggage interpreted it differently.
Yeah.
And then the third one, the untrue perceptions are when, I don't know, I ask him to bring home half and half for me, and he brings home half and half, and it's fat-free. And so I perceive, I manufacture a motive in his brain that was not there, that he wishes that I were a little more fat-free too, you know? So my perception becomes my reality, but it's not at all based on truth. It's skewed.
Well, this is really important because I think my guess would be you're just reaching for the first, you know.
It was complete error, yeah.
Bottle of.
I grabbed the wrong one, yeah, exactly. Boom.
I could so relate to that. Yes. But there's that ruminating effect, Karen, that you're describing. And, you know, we don't want to be stereotypical, but women can tend to put a lot into those mishaps that it's not there. And,
exactly.
And that really goes to the expectation area where you've got to first ask the question. And I would suggest that playful is always good. You know, honey, why would you have grabbed this? And you're going, grab what? Right? Mm-hmm. And is that a good diffuser of a trigger?
Playful's good. And then the other one we use a lot, and it's not original to me, someone taught me to say it, is help me to understand. Help me to understand.
Why that sounds more serious.
Yeah, that sounds a little more serious. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, what in the world? Fat-free? It better have been on sale. There better not be another message in there.
Yes, it was.
It was half price.
But you're so right, not to be stereotypical, but I think women, we can concoct things in our mind, and we create this whole scenario and this narrative that's not even there, rather than just stopping and saying, hey, when you did this, or when you said this, this is how I heard it. Was that correct? And if they say no, believe them. Don't manufacture a motive that's not there.
Yeah. But again, the unawareness is usually what is left behind. The spouse fails to realize it may have been a total accident. Let's start with, that's really starting with, a good place. I'm sure you didn't do this on purpose, hon.
And this is another place where that one of those trio of trouble comes. This perception might be based on some baggage you had. Maybe
correct.
You were called chubby when you were little, and so you see the fat-free and it triggers something. They're all kind of connected.
Now, those are good examples. Conflict is part of every marriage, and I know some have contacted us after hearing something like this and said, my husband and I have never argued. So, you know, wow, that is going to be in a small percentile of marriages, even Christian marriages. And there needs to be that recognition that when two people are together, there can be disagreement. And I would suggest typically disagreement. And you got to work through that, how you're going to do it. You share a word picture about a bottle of adhesive. Now, let's figure that out. What are you talking about?
Well, there's this product called JB Weld. My husband has used it on many items to prepare them in our house.
Way to go, Todd.
You can use it on faucets.
You have grown.
Yes. He's Mr. Handyman now. Yeah, we've been married 30 years. He's now Mr. Handyman. He's not back at the
house. I've been married 32, and it hasn't rubbed off on me.
But JB Weld is not like a glue stick. It's not got a pretty packaging, and it's just this little tacky substance that only holds a couple little things together for a little amount of time. It comes with two tubes of completely different substances, and when you mix them in equal amounts, it forms some kind of chemical reaction, and this heating happens that then will bond anything together. He's fixed an old colander I've had, I think, since we got married over 30 years ago, an old stainless steel colander that was coming apart. The bottom rim was coming apart, and he fixed it.
Hold it. If you order now, we're going to double your offer. This is the best commercial they can have.
But what I love about this picture of marriage and JB Weld is they're two completely different compounds, but when they're mixed together equally, over time, this heat that happens, it forms this bond that can't be broken. And so we need to learn to see the conflicts, the frustration, the times where we have to say, I'm sorry, and forgive. Those are bonding us together.
We'll have much more with Todd and Karen Eamon next time. And I trust that you've been encouraged by their story, by their vulnerability, and by the laughter that we've enjoyed along the way here. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
thanks for joining us for today's Focus on the Family. Whether you listen on radio or listen online, we do hope it has been a blessing. We need families like yours to help fund this ministry. I'd invite you to go to our website at families.org.au and donate so that we can continue to help more Australian families like yours to thrive.